Hello, my name is Nick Taylor, and I would welcome you to What is the Mood, presented by the Illinois Human Performance Project. Today is our first episode. We have a very special guest. This person is the founder of Life of an Athlete Human Performance Project and was instrumental in designing the Human Performance Project for the U.S. Navy SEALs teams. This special guest also advised more than 24 Olympians and holds 3 International Olympic Solidarity Diplomas for coaching. Without further ado, welcome to the show, John Underwood. How you doing today, John?
Great, great, Nick. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you for taking the time out of your day to be here. So let's start at the beginning. What made you want to pursue and start this Life of an Athlete program? And could you dive more into what the main foundations of Life of an Athlete is?
Yeah, it really for me started back when I was an athlete. I don't want to tell people all about my career, but like growing up with a father who was an athletic director and a very, very highly respected coach in New York State, and 4 boys in a family that were all involved in high level sport in 4 different sports in high school, all coming out of the same family. And it's a little different sometimes when you've got an example living right in your house. And had a very balanced and, healthy relationship with my dad, throughout his life. And it really had an impact on me as far as my habits and my lifestyle and what I wanted to do and what I wanted to be from a very young age. And I'm talking age 10, 11, 12. I mean, we were all into sports galore at that age, which a lot of kids are. But not to ever shortchange the idea that it's just about sports. I mean, those are the years where you start to find a passion for something, maybe, and in most cases, something that you're good at, or it makes you feel good about what you're doing, or maybe you just like the challenge of what it brings you. But what was in high school, a state place winner in multiple sports, and after that, went on to college and was an NCAA All-American and then went right out to Oregon and had one of the greatest coaches in history. And the founder of Nike, Bill Bowerman, was my coach out in Oregon Track Club. And this is back in the late 70s, early 80s. And he actually then started Nike just to take the chance to try to go for it and maybe have a chance to be an Olympian and ran internationally and so forth. So, I mean, my first exposure into any of this was just wanting to be a good athlete and just saying, tell me what I got to do, I'll do it. And I had talent. So I was very conscious of the way I was living my life from a very young age. And I think that's a perspective that some people have, but most don't. And I'm only saying it because I have observed for 4 decades of my work a decline in the concern for health that we have in this country. And you've seen the beginning of the obesity and the overweight epidemic, the diet in America getting worse and worse and worse, the use of substances, the busy schedules and the taking over of people's lives with media and technology to a point where you burn more time doing that in a day than maybe working or pursuing your goals and then at night some more. And so minimize sleep and unprecedented stress levels and substance abuse and substance use. One comes before the other, but that's where it usually heads. And also other substances, so we looked at everything, caffeine, nicotine, energy drinks, sugar. You sometimes have to break it down and take it a component at a time as far as its contribution to a person's demise of their health or welfare or well-being. And now the crisis of mental wellness. So, I mean, if you add all those things together, for me, it's a historical, 43rd year of work. It's watching the demise of healthy lifestyle behaviors. And I saw a lot of, athletes who I competed against, even in my event or in the same time in other events that were super talents, world level talents, potential Olympic and world medalists who had atrocious health habits, and I used to shake my head and say, well, that puts me a place ahead of them just because of the way they're living their lives. And but rather than just use it as an advantage, which I did when I was an athlete, I started to think how ill-informed people are, that they don't know these things and they don't really have a perspective of how much it either waters down your talent or ruins it or washes it away. So I began, as I started to become a coach, I started to talk to athletes about, and I coached a lot of my own athletes after being an athlete. I just started to have conversations with them about, you know, this isn't going to work. And I'm talking to the level where if people came to join our training group, which we had many, many Olympians and national team members in, I would just say, this isn't for you. And that you could think that that's given up on people or whatever, but I couldn't have those bad habits infiltrate our program because, you know, people with bad habits tend to take people with them. And so I ended up just saying, this isn't going to work and you have to go find some other place to work. You can't be in this training group. And then as I got out of coaching with 20 years after, with 20 years of coaching was over with Olympic sport, I immediately started to say, you know what, I have to now, rather than exclude people, I have to try to help people. And I actually took 3 years off and became a prevention educator. I knew nothing about any of this. And I started to learn what we could impact. And then I started, and it's 23rd year of this, my own program called Life of an Athlete, First for Sport, and then Human Performance Project, which is for any high performance population. I started to make these educational modules to help people have the right information to make the right choices.
Sure. And when you talk about these modules, what are those main foundations? I know you touched on a little bit, like sleep, chemical health, your mood and mindset. What are those main driving points in those foundations?
Well, one, you know, I always have said that like a huge void is, and these are of course connected, mood and mindset. I mean, like, all right, people that doubt themselves, people that go into situations with a negative outlook, like, you know, oh, we're going to get killed today. And, you know, you almost have to tell them, yeah, you bet you are. Or a preconceived narrative. You know, I got a lot of these things also from my work with the Navy SEAL teams. You know, I mean, you don't go out on ops and go on missions and into all that danger and all those unknowns and have an outlook like, oh, maybe today I'll get killed. You know, that just doesn't happen any more than someone who's going to be a champion walks out on a wrestling mat or a starting line going like, oh, I think maybe today I'll get pinned or I'll finish last place. I mean, these people who are top athletes, their body's in an optimal state. Their mind is in an optimal state. And we just started to realize how many people talk themselves out of things rather than talk themselves into things, or have this horribly negative outlook, which almost premeditates everything that's going to go down. And, so, you know, we started to look even at scientific studies that have absolutely proven that, like, if you have a negative mindset, it's actually a signal to your body that you aren't ready to perform. And it actually shuts some stuff down, including the connection between brain and body, for instance, muscles and power outputs and everything. So, you know, we realized that was important. So that was mood and mindset. But then we also connected a lot of it to, you know, the escalating, you know, incidents in our culture of depression and doubt and insecurity and anxiety that kids have nowadays. And we said, okay, we have to almost have a module, not just for mood and mindset, to get people on the positive page, because it opens up so many incredible possibilities. You know, if you doubt yourself, you're giving it up before you even start. And if you at least have a positive outlook, you know, you stand some chance. And if you really believe it, it actually helps you talk yourself into it and it impacts even performance at some point. But we also realized that, like, this mental wellness, it's a mental health crisis, but we wanted to use mental wellness as our view of it, because we're not, you know, clinically, you know, capable, but just to talk to kids about, you know, are you okay? I mean, you have all these pressures and you've got, you know, everybody's on your case to win and perform and be the straight A student and get in this, the magical school and, you know, have a great future and all these things. And then you have, you know, kids that you know, they're just beaten down from all these, like, you know, the super performer complex. So we ended up trying to really help people realize, like, what's healthy in a mental approach to performing. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that no high school I know of has a sports psychologist working with all their teams. Most colleges don't, unless they really are the top tier colleges. And I've been to almost all of them. You know, of course they have psychologists come in and you know, talk to the team about these topics, but like from a mental wellness standpoint, we have a lot of people suffering. We have a lot of people with issues. And even if you think what's happened with COVID, you know, people who had this dream to be a state champ and the season's canceled, you know, I mean, that's what does the kid do then? What if nobody sees them that was going to give them a scholarship? And, you know, all these things are like just, you know, now seem to be drifting away. And now we're here, we're entering, you know, another year of unknowns. So, yeah, we need this to be a priority in all schools, not just for athletes, but for students, dancers, musicians, artists, everything. And that's just from pressure alone. The next one is sleep. And, you know, I don't think you have too much of an argument from anyone that sleep has been minimized. You know, people are strung out from the number of things they do. A lot of people don't realize it, but a lot of people are neurotransmitter depleted all the time. So they're just used to being tired. So we had to really start thinking about, okay, what are the factors that, you know, positive sleep would help. And if you don't have, if you have sleep debt, like how much does it take, you know, how does it derail your possibilities for mental and physical performance? So all the context of our work has been mental and physical performance, not just physical, because the things are totally in sync. They're controlled together simultaneously. And you know, we also found out through studies that Tim Noakes did in South Africa that the brain runs the body, and that under the highest levels of fatigue, the end of a race, a match, a game, whatever, when you're all tired, that you and your opponents are tired, that the brain actually shuts down the body. You know, it's not that muscles get tired and fatigued and run out of fuels and you get dehydrated. You basically get to a point where the brain says enough and shuts everything down. So it's that's pretty important. Another one is besides mental wellness and mood and mindset, sleep is nutrition. I mean, I hope you know by now that we live in the most of modernized nations, the most horrific diet and food availability and with fast food and sugar and salt and fat and every aspect. So we wrote the Power Back Diet and we started pushing it. It's used all over. In my travels to other countries to work with their Olympic athletes, they've translated it into their languages. And yeah, they have nutritionists and stuff in those countries. And that can be a pretty provincial thing to step into because I'm not a nutritionist, but I consulted with people and nutritionists everywhere that were top shelf people and said, how can we write a document so that it cuts through all the calorie counting and gets you to a point where here's what your body needs to perform and here's what your body for sure doesn't need.
Yeah.
And you know, so that became a really cult classic also, because it was the first time somebody made something short enough. You know, we kept our manuals to about 20 pages so that people would read it. I mean, no one's going to get a whole, you know, a 300 page book about it and read it. But if they really want to know, you know, what makes you run on high octane fuels, for instance, you can be spelling it out in 20 pages, believe me. So
it's crazy to think that just what you put in your body is so important, and how many people just kind of don't really pay attention to that. But it's such a simple idea that the good foods you put into your body are going to bring good results, right?
Yeah. And also like how much, when you take the wrong things in, how much it out of kilter all your other systems go. And you know, that's another thing we really looked at is like, you know, how much your blood glucose level affects your brain outputs. And, you know, when you have low blood sugar, almost everyone has had low blood sugar when you don't eat for a long time, and you just start feeling tired and groggy and you can't concentrate, you can't focus. You know, you're no good in the classroom. You're no good on the court. You're no good on the race course. You're weak. Your power outputs decrease. You feel terrible. You get shaky even at some point in time. So, and the same thing with hydration. And also if you're missing key nutrients or vitamins or minerals, you know, the things we started finding out were like, you know, here I'm going to talk to pro NBA teams and NFL teams and NHL teams. And I'm sharing as much as I can. I mean, seldom do people bring me in to talk to a top level program where they just want me to talk about pot and alcohol. Right. I mean, that's a huge misnomer for people. And when people used to introduce me and they'd say, he knows all about how it affects pot and alcohol affects performance, I would say, you know, please don't say that. There's more to it than that. And yeah. And these things are all interconnected. It's not like one thing is holding you back. It's usually a whole bunch of things holding you back.
Yeah. And I mean, I think you're entirely right, but how do you yourself now use these modules, these like building blocks in daily practices? Are you making sure that you're going to bed at a certain time? Are you keeping track of what you're eating?
You know, I think if you look at how people's health habits change, you got to give it a chance and you got to give it some time. You know, I mean, like, of course, in our culture, we want quick fixes and we want like instant results and we want results now. And, you know, development of being, you know, I don't care if you're a dancer, musician, artist, student, anything, it takes time. And if you have good habits from the beginning, when you start the project, there's a much bigger percent of your talent that you're going to tap into than if you don't. I mean, you can stumble onto this stuff halfway through your young athlete career, say with middle school and high school sport, for instance, or 4 years of college. I've had every scenario happen and testimonials galore of people saying that, like, I wasn't really doing anything that I thought was bad. You know, I wasn't smoking dope. I wasn't drinking. I was getting sleep. But my diet, I used to eat, you know, every once in a while I would just, you know, go off the rails and eat some really crappy foods for a couple weeks. Then I'd start to feel funny and I'd get back on it. You know, it's also that you can't go hot, cold. You have to say, if I want my brain and my body to run at an optimum level, I have to take care of myself. It's no different than saying this, and I'll say this to anybody. If you're in shape and you're very healthy, and you get out of shape, the first thing you just say is, it's such a battle to get back to where you were. Or say you gain a whole bunch of weight. It's very difficult to go back to where you were. And I mean, it's a battle. And a lot of people, it becomes this battle where you start to put a dent in it and then you backtrack and then you lose some weight, you gain some weight, or you have some, you know, you don't party for like, 3 months and then you get right back into it. So I just think that if you want to be successful, I heard this quote once and it was actually from a very famous physiologist. And he said, he was from Sweden and they were some of the first, you know, pioneers in human performance. And he said, all things in nature grow once. And if you think about, you know, animals, plants, body, human body, whatever, your systems start some level and they grow and they grow and they grow. Well, what if you gave them everything that you could give them to grow optimally? Don't you think that would equate into the possibility that you would be healthier so that you would be more successful somewhere down the road? And so, I mean, I think that's really a lot of what, you know, connects. And I think that's why a lot of people are interested. Everyone wants to be good, Nick. You know, they say, like, if you ask kids, like, you know, do you want to be faster or stronger, score more points or start instead of sitting the bench? Or do you want to be a section champ, a state champ? You know, a lot of kids will say right off the top, no, that's my dream, man. That's what I want. Then we're not hard selling a product here. You know, we're just saying if you want that to happen, it's not just that you're going to have a good coach and do the right workouts and put in the time, effort, and energy. You have to be living a lifestyle that's conducive to those things happening. And, you know, I mean, you, you've heard the stories. Everyone out there listening to podcasts have heard the stories of amazing people who got caught up in the wrong stuff, and it goes off the cliff sooner or later. And a lot of those people, I would say probably the majority of those people that go off the cliff because of their lifestyle, a lot of them, unfortunately, will never make it back where they were, even much less surpass it. Not to say you can't, but you know, it's just it does such damage. And if you look at development, sport development, I mean, once you get to a high level, like a state champ, a college athlete, a professional athlete, an Olympic athlete, you can have 1 year that pretty much sidetracks your continued improvement. So
when you're, you know, you mentioned how these really start at a young age, and it's like you said, if you want the optimal performance, why not give it the optimal materials as a young age and watch it grow? What is some advice that you can give to parents or coaches that may have these student athletes or just students in general that they can provide them with as they do grow?
Nick, it's a great question, because it's the most important one, is that you can go and buy your kid a personal trainer. Lots of parents do nowadays. You can get your kid in the travel teams and the right league and all the best equipment known to mankind, and, you know, spend, you know, thousands of dollars every time your kid, you know, starts a new season. You can send them all over the United States to, you know, to compete against all the other people doing the same thing. But if your kid's living some messed up lifestyle, I really think the reality check, and it's not, and I told you so, you just don't realize where it's not going to go. You know, how about that there's the bedtime that somebody in the house, usually an adult, would say, hey, you know what? You're an athlete. It's 11 o'clock. It's time to go to bed, right? Or you got a really important game coming up this weekend and you need to get extra sleep to build up central nervous system energy reserves so you don't have central nervous system energy deficits. And then you go out to play and it's a dud and you make a bunch of mistakes. And instead of scoring your normal 15 points, you score two and your team gets crushed. And, you know, it's all connected. But parents, we can't just educate the kids. You know, kids are impressionable. It's the most impressionable age, these teen years, especially when you're, you know, from middle school to high school, you're figuring it out and you're taking notes and you're, you know, it's important. Again, I mean, even think of this context, who you're with, you know, who's your buddy, who's your posse that you're hanging out with. And if you're in with kids who are doing stuff that's counterproductive or, you know, unhealthy or dangerous or anything else, you know, it's the single biggest factor in a kid getting involved with pot or alcohol is hanging out with kids who are into pot and alcohol. Is that rocket science? No, but a lot of people just don't realize it. I know parents that have said to me, well, my son hangs out with kids that do that stuff, but he doesn't do it. And I go, well, keep letting him hang out there. That's not what you want. I said, you're making a huge mistake just in not trying to get him to hang out with some kids who don't get involved in those behaviors. And yeah, you got to make your choices, but how about when parents used to actually help children make those choices? So we realized from the beginning, we're not going to just educate middle school and high school kids and college kids and Olympic and pro athletes. We're going to try to educate the parents too, especially when the kids are still in that young age, because the parents need the same sound bites. This has gone to a point where we have people come to our talks, sometimes those mandatory seasonal meetings, and they'll talk about a specific topic with our materials. And there'll be parents there bobblehead and going like, wow, whoa, I didn't know that. And I didn't know that. And, you know, you're explaining to them why your kid shouldn't be up at 1 o'clock in the morning messing around with his phone. He should be asleep. He should have already been asleep for 2 or 3 hours. And the same thing, like, you know, kids aren't cooking meals that I know of, you know, I mean, you know, what if there's healthier food choices, your kid has more energy, they play better, they're leaner, they're more efficient. So we tried to connect all the dots. And I think that's the biggest thing is, all right, this information is for coaches and kids and parents, or anybody running any activity that where performance matters and counts. I already said dance, music, art, anything, academics. And, you know, you give the sound bites, people say, oh, wow, I didn't know that. Wow, that's interesting. And based on science, I mean, you got to back it up with something other than your opinion. And then people can't say anymore, well, I didn't know. And I think that's been the biggest value of this program. And you asked me this earlier, maybe it's that if you don't know, you don't know. That's in a lot of respects nowadays, I can say it's not your fault. We could do a better job with the education that we haven't provided on COVID, for instance. Maybe more people, if they really understood, we'd be in a whole different place right now than we are, rather than at 50%. You know, I mean, that's just another example. But once they have the information, they can't say, I don't know anymore. And then either you're talking a great story and it's not the real story, or you just don't care. And I've said this to athletes myself. I've said, you can tell me that you want to be an NCAA champ, but if you're doing this, that's not the story. And, you know, that may be harsh and that may be a hard reality for somebody, but if you go look in the mirror, you pretty much know that, you know, this guy, I'm the one trying to fool myself. It's not this guy trying to get me to just do something he wants me to do. So, so it's been interesting, you know, to have gone into Alabama football and UConn and Baylor basketball and Oregon and all these marquee programs where maybe you're just going in to talk to one sport team, Hopkins lacrosse or Maryland lacrosse, or, other times they'll bring you in and they'll say, we want all of our athletes to hear this. And I can either do these mass meetings of the clans, I call it, where you have, like the Scottish clans, where you're talking to all the athletes in the giant auditorium. And I always say, you know what, the dynamics of getting this information when all your teammates are together is way more profound if you're with a team. And when you have a team that hears it all at the same time, they actually can start thinking about what they do as a team, because teams certainly eat together, drink together, party together or not. All the recovery methods. I mean, there's the other thing that goes with sleep and recovery, because the majority of recovery happens during sleep. And the last one, which we didn't even mention yet, maybe you were going to ask, is what is a team and what is team dynamics and what's the factors that actually determine whether a team is even a team. So we have our the sixth topic, which we will talk about during these podcasts, which is, you know, being on a team, what does it mean? And so that's pretty much the gist. You know, it's not just for kids, it's not just for athletes. It's for anybody who's in the support team that is helping somebody try to make something awesome happen.
Yeah. I really like how you use that word support. I mean, it initially stuck out to me is just how it is a lot more than just that single person, and they have those support systems to kind of help them. But at the end of the day, like you said, you got to look in the mirror and you got to make those right decisions. Mm-hmm. And to backtrack a little bit, talking more about life of an athlete, when you think about that program and you see these student athletes or just these students grow through the different stages, you could say, what are some of the bigger accomplishments that come to mind when you think about life of an athlete?
Well, it's really interesting because, I came out with this concept. I told you I got away from Olympic sport. I said, I need a total change. And I said, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I started thinking about this. I saw so many athletes with messed up lifestyles. I said, you know, somebody really needs to like make this a program to teach athletes how imperative it is that you live a healthy lifestyle if you want to have any chance of maximizing your possibilities or your potential. So, I took 3 years and went in prevention ed. I had like access to 14 high schools and middle school and elementary school districts. And I started just to really see what we could impact, how we could impact it, and learn the principles of prevention, because you need to know them. And it's, you know, the average person just thinks, well, somebody does something wrong and you just tell them they did something wrong, or they think that like you can just go in and, you know, reframe it for them. No, it's like people have to decide that this isn't for me anymore, and I need to make the changes, you know, or people who just are with the wrong people, right? So I mean, maybe your peer group or whatever, and there's so many different factors. But I also didn't understand, like, how do people get caught up in this? Not just the substance issues with pot, alcohol, or whatever. Why would somebody just eat horrible, unhealthy foods just and keep doing it? Why would somebody be tired all the time because they don't sleep and just keep being tired? You just get used to it. After that 3 years in prevention, I started to make this program Life of an Athlete for middle schooler and high school athletes. And it was going to encompass a lot of these topics. So I started to just think about, okay, what scientific research is there? What can I do being a physiologist? What kind of studies could I even start doing some case studies on people? And I had access to athletes at the Olympic Training Center in Lake Placid, which was the county I was working in. So I knew some athletes who had issues and stuff with, you know, behaviors and substances and so forth. So I started doing some little pilot studies, and it was like night and day, like the impact with or without some of those behaviors. And then I started going around seeing if people were interested in it. And I got it mandated in New York State by New York State Public High School Athletic Association, which is the middle school and high school sport brokerage for state championships and playoffs and all that. And the lady that was in charge mandated the program in all public schools for 5 years. So they say
that's
that,
so cool.
Yeah. So they say, you know, so here was somebody that was just, I couldn't believe when she said, yeah, we need to do this. It was fantastic. So her name was Nina Van Erick, and she ended up telling these sections. So we have, you know, in our state, we have 11 sections of all these high school athletes, 585,000 high school athletes. And, around 700 school districts, I think. And she says, nope, every school is going to have mandatory seasonal meetings with their athletes, coaches, and parents brought in. And here's the information we're going to show you on those nights. And it wasn't just pot and alcohol. It was all these things. It was phenomenal. So
that's so cool.
So prevention people were like, wow, you know, and then we looked at the data that showed that anywhere from 40 to 90% of kids do a sport. All right, you may say what? In inner city schools, it was 40 to 50% of kids do a sport, at least one sport a year. In schools in the burbs, it was anywhere from, you know, 50 to 65% of kids did a sport. And in small rural schools, and I got somewhere I can tell you this is absolutely spot on true, as much as 90% of kids do a sport. So we said, okay, well, we can also lump in activities because these same groups that are overseeing sports, now most of them oversee music, art, dance, band, debate, all these different clubs and groups of people. So it really was great because it encompassed all these different venues where kids are with their peers and their buddies. And we ended up starting that program, and then it spread. New Mexico, we got a grant from their Department of Transportation. They got a grant for $500,000, so they started it. And then all these other states, Nebraska, Michigan, Illinois, New Hampshire. The next state after that, after New Mexico and New York, was New Hampshire. They got a grant from the New Hampshire Charitable Trust. I think it was a 10-year $1 million grant. And one of their seven state prevention strategies, of all prevention strategies to impact youth, was Life of an Athlete New Hampshire. And you can look it up on these websites. It's phenomenal. So they take materials, they brand it, they put their logo on it, and they start doing the same things. Give the information to people so they can make better choices and decisions. And so I think that's the biggest thing. And then we made a program college appropriate. So, you know, now mom and dad are out of the picture, but this is, now you're a young adult and you got to call your own shots. But when you go away to college, you sure as heck need some information to be able to stay out of the mix in some things and get in the mix for some other things. And, like I said, we've been to hundreds and hundreds of colleges, and, you know, name one, I can pretty much tell you, where we've been. And it's really been fantastic because, you know, you're going in and you always meet with the coaching staffs, the rehab people, the recovery people, the strength and power people. I don't ever go to a college where I just go talk to their athletes at night at 7 o'clock and they're all in a auditorium, and you're going in to talk to Nick Saban. And, you know, it's no different than the first time I went to the SEAL teams. You go in and you tell what you got. And I give the same approach to everybody. You know, here, you signed up for this. No one's making you do this. You say you want to be good. I'm going to tell you right tonight how you can be better, or you can be good. And all it involves is that you live a healthy lifestyle, and you do the right things, and you do things right. So it's grown and it's been very satisfying. I wish the first 20 years I wasn't with elite sport. I wish I had, I was in a lab and coaching full time, but I think back now and I think to myself, I needed that perspective in order to have had the success that we've had in this next 23 years. And I still have the same enthusiasm for it. Yeah, I'm tired of the travel and all that, but I love to help somebody to see the light or get the big picture or make some small change that's going to just change their life. And that's what it's about.
Yeah, that's so cool. And that's, again, congratulations with those accomplishments. That's awesome. To wrap us up, John, what is one major idea or point that people listening today can walk away with?
And none of this is scripted. We said we're going to just have a talk. I would say that I don't think that if you're growing up in these times and in this country, you need anybody to tell you that there's a lot of stuff that's not right. Okay. And you could pick from what that statement means. But I will say this, the problem is that people's lives nowadays are so busy, that you just don't take the time to think about what you could fix or make better. And I think that's it. We all get caught up in like this, I just get up and go, right? Whether you're a parent that's just burning it at both ends for your kids and you're both working and, you rush from here to there and you take your kids all over and drop them off and pick them up. And I remember those crazy years because I had 5 kids of my own. I had 2 of my kids were on, one was on a NCAA championship team. And another one was, one of the best skiers in the country, cross country skier. And, I just think to myself, you get so caught up in just, surviving that you sometimes concede or you say, well, you know what? There's no way I can keep doing this. So, and same thing, like minimizing sleep and being tired and getting used to it and all those different factors. And so I've peddled this message, if that's what it is, to the military, ballet companies, Cirque du Soleil, Olympic sport, countries will invite us to come and just show us what we got, and then they'll make it in their own language. When I went to Japan, to the Japanese Institute of Sport Sciences, they had already translated all of our stuff into their own language. I got there and I was like, you gotta be kidding me. This is already done. And, so it's a beautiful thing to have, I said, look, all I'm doing is taking science and information. And I'm just trying to help people realize how important it is. And that's, I think that's the best thing I did with my life, to be honest with you, is, to have had people say to me, man, I was just doing it wrong. And once I started to do it right, it just took off. And that's for me, the most satisfying part. I don't really care. And I said this a long time ago about my own children. I don't care what my kids win, how much money they make. I care that they're happy and they're healthy. More than anything else, that they're happy and they're healthy. Because if they're happy and they're healthy, all those other things will just fall into place. I think that's been lost too. I think that's the message, is that if you'll take the time to believe that these things matter and count, you'll really start to see how much they matter and count.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you again, John, for being here today. We appreciate the knowledge you shared with us and, getting us started on the right foot. Again, my name is Nick Taylor. Thank you for listening to today's episode of What is the Mood, presented by the Illinois Human Performance Project. See you later, John.
Thanks, Nick. Take care.